This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Shahad Kutin, and our guest on the Breakfast Grill today is Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, former Minister of International Trade and Industry. Her high-profile support for Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad during the lead-up to the general election led to her sacking from UMNO days before the May 9th polls. You can join our conversation with Tan Sri by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Thank you, Tan Sri, for joining us this morning. I want to begin with the polls. And the 9th, you, of course, were campaigning for Pakatan Harapan. Can you tell us if you expected the outcome that we had on May 9th?
I did, although not to the extent that we won. You know, I did because I knew that over the almost 2 years that I had been interacting with my Facebook and so on issues faced by the country, I realized there are people who are up to their neck, literally, on the scandals, the problems, the issues that were never resolved, never explained. And there was this very widespread feeling they needed the change, a change that will bring a better Malaysia, you know, where we can do away with these very pernicious acts that really made us very shameful. Yeah, and on that, I was very confident that we will win. It's just by how many seats. And in fact, we won beyond our expectations, at least beyond my expectations.
What do you think accounts for the quite astounding scenario? So it was one of the least likely scenarios by any analyst talking
exactly.
about elections.
Because nobody gave us a chance. Us, I mean the PH, right? Simply because they thought that, these are four disparate parties, people who were at loggerheads before, seemingly. No, not true. We may be disparate parties in the sense that there were four different parties who never were in a coalition, but they were people of the same mind, like-mindedness, and they're people having the same aspirations, which is to meet what the rakyat's expectations are, to gel together, putting aside whatever form of differences they had before, to achieve these common goals. And I believe in that because I see that somebody like Tun Mahathir has come out to even sacrifice his time and his energy to bring four parties together, to bring people who actually have set loggerheads together for many years for the common cause. And that, to me, has never happened in Malaysia.
What is the turning point for you when you gave up on the government of Najib Razak or when you gave up on UMNO?
No, there's no turning point. I've been watching ever since he retired. I took a break maybe 1 year. And then after that, things began to pop up here and there. And when I was one of the first to ask a question in my weekly column in Udusa, Malaysia, where I was a columnist, and I questioned the 2.6 billion. And what is a quid pro quo? You know, those kind of probing questions. I was told the PMO, Prime Minister's Office, told Udusa not to print it. And I was in hospital then having surgery. And I was so riled up. I said, what? You can't even question? And, you know, they were disappointed, the editors and so on, about what to do, a directive from above, from heaven. And then I just told Sinar Harian, I now give you permission if you want to, please. And I print the whole thing. And they did, whole half page of it. Then I started to think, you know, if people suppress even little questions like, you know, what is in it for the country, blah, 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 blah. And I said, my God, there's something wrong here. I'm just asking questions, not even accusing anyone. Simple. And that's not allowed. That was the turning point. That day in August.
Where were you getting information from? Did you have sources in government that were telling you what was happening?
No, I just read the media. I mean, there's so many reports in the media, some ridiculous reports. I wondered which person in this world, whether it's Saudi prince, I don't care which prince, could actually give away 2.6 billion of his assets. If he owned 26 billion ringgit worth of assets, he has to give away 10%? I mean, that's almost godly gesture, you know. 26 million, maybe. 2.6 million, we'll close our eyes. It's philanthropy. 2.6 billion. Now, here, and we know the list of very rich people. How many actually own 26 billion to give away 10%?
So you weren't getting information from sources in government?
Not necessary. I mean, you know, at that time, we can always get around. If I don't think many people in government really knew.
This is very interesting. Who knew about the scandal? I want to ask you, though, about May 9th again. The question of a peaceful transfer. Were you concerned at any point that we might not have had a transfer of power or even a peaceful transfer of power?
Let me put it this way. Let's stop talking about this stupid transfer of power. There is no transfer of power. It's the votes of the people. I mean, talking transfer of power is like, you know, you voluntarily stepped down. There was no elections. Hey, I'm fed up. People are ganging up on me. Please, that's transfer of power. Harshly or smoothly. This is not transfer of power. Please get it out of our minds. This is the people have spoken. They chose a completely new government. They are fed up with the old government. That's it. So please delete those words, transfer of power.
Okay, the former Prime Minister Najib Razak accused you earlier this month of having a holier-than-thou attitude.
Yes.
What do you make of his fate now moving forward?
I don't want to even elaborate on that. You had read my statement, right? My answer, just one sentence, no more. I said, compared to a klepto, anyone is holier. And that should speak a million words.
What do you think will be his legacy? And also,
his legacy is rubbish. His legacy is shame and disgrace. It's a pity, you know. There's so much going for him. We thought he'll take over from that, you know, sluggish governance that we had after Tun Mahathir, right? I don't want to berate and belittle anybody, but I'm just saying it's sluggish. We thought that he was more energetic, more forward-looking, visionary, blah, blah, blah. But clearly, as we went down over the years, it didn't turn out to be like that. It turned out to be a great disappointment. And when you have scandal after scandal, that couldn't be explained. And scandals that actually pointed out to greed, avarice, wanting to use money for power, you know, and not really governing seriously and governing by slogans. I hate slogans, okay? Minimize slogans. If you see Amana cakap bersih, yes. Any more slogans, I want to vomit. So, you can't govern by slogans. You can't govern by consultancies. You have any number of consultants who will tell you, and you have write books. I mean, I'm tired of reading the pamphlets that have appeared. I don't know how many millions you spend on this rubbish. One Malaysia here, one Malaysia now, one Malaysia sudah habis already.
What about the legacy of his family? He, of course, is the son of the second Prime Minister of the country. Do you think that he, in some ways, has tarnished the legacy that his family, the good name of his family?
Let me put it this way. I worked with his father as I worked with Tun Hussein. I came into government with Tun Hussein. His father made me senator at age 30. And I was in the Supreme Council of his father, right? That was way back in 75. My God, they're so different. Not like father, like son at all. And I wouldn't say that he tarnished his father's reputation and so on. His father's good legacy will remain. His legacy is separate. I don't even want to make comparison. It's not fair bringing in the name of Razak in the same breath as Najib. He created his own legacy, and it should be remain that way. You know, it's a pity that you have to talk, oh, his father's legacy. Many people do not even know his father, right? They were not born yet at that time. So I would like to say his father left a legacy that we should all be proud of because he started the development process right after Tengku Abdul Rahman. And his son, by the time he took over, made a mess of it. So we should put it separately. Don't link it.
Tan Sri, you were sacked from UMNO. Have you joined Bersatu?
Excuse me. Which idiot said that I was sacked? I was no longer in UMNO. I never went to any branch meeting after I retired from government. I never paid any dues. I didn't even know that they no longer had dues. That's how much I cared. And, of course, I didn't write a letter to say I have resigned. Not necessary, lah. You know, it's not necessary. For God's sake, there are millions of voters who are not members of any party. So to me, card-carrying member is not necessary. Unless I want to contest in the elections, unless I want to vie for some seats. And I'm not interested. I just want to help Tun Mahathir and the group wherever I can in my little way.
Are you going to be helping in any kind of formal sense with the Pakatan Harapan
let
government?
Let me put it this way. Tone has asked me to come on board to do certain things and so on, and that's what I'm doing. No publicity, nothing, because I work that way. Yeah, it's better that I work quietly put in where inputs where I feel I can. Whether my suggestions are accepted or not, that's beside the point. But I will try to the best of my ability, you know, present some of the things I feel we need to do moving forward. Some are new ideas, some are trying to revive old ideas that were successful.
I'm speaking to Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, former Minister of International Trade and Industry. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning and welcome back to The Breakfast Girl. I'm Sharad Kutin. Today with me is Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, former Minister of International Trade and Industry. You can join our conversation with her by tweeting us at BFM Radio, WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. In fact, we have so many questions now coming in, Tan Sri, and I'm going to begin with this because there is a blame game going on in UMNO today about what went wrong and who's to blame. One name that might come up, and perhaps frequently, is the name of Rosmah Mansoor. Now, Mr. Singh has asked, do you think Rosmah Mansoor played decision-making roles in the Najib administration? How important was she in his administration?
I have no direct knowledge of that. I was never involved in anything. I hear stories about it, but clearly there have been some inputs from her, you know, to cause some concerns in some quarters. And to me, it's important that if you're a wife of the Prime Minister, you do not get involved in anything at all. And if the stories were true, then it's sad for the country. It was sad for the country, right? So this has to be investigated, of course.
Now, in April this year, a glove maker, Supermax Corporation, announced your resignation as chairperson. And this followed the high-profile apology by its group managing director, Stanley Tai, Prime Minister Najib Razak. You also served as a non-executive independent chairman of AirAsia X. Some critics say that you caused Stanley Tai and Tony Fernandez grief. Is that how you see it?
Well, the background story is that the two companies were pressed, were squeezed by the regime to sack me because of my very vocal postings and comments and so on, which actually hit home. That's why. If they were not true, they would have denied it. Up to today, I have not got any answer to any of the allegations I made, which are based on facts, all right? So the cabinet papers will show it. Now, having said that, for Stanley Tai, I said, look, I can resign, but they didn't allow me to resign. So I said, okay, I will continue to speak. Nobody's going to stop me. Only God will. And no idiot in this country will ever make me stop talking, especially when it is what I say is right. Okay, that's my stand. It's my democratic right. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying facts, right?
Do you blame individuals like Stanley Tai who came out?
I haven't finished. I said, I'll continue to speak. So for Stanley, well, I will continue to speak. I think the pressure was too much on him. I was told that all those that he did and he said were actually orchestrated for him. But the point is, I do not like anybody groveling. Groveling is not in my vocabulary. If I have to be a chairman of a company where the CEO has to grovel to say sorry, I don't know what he has to say sorry for. It is right to support anyone on earth in any elections. And to have been made to say sorry and subscribe to that, I think I don't accept that. That's why I resigned. I resigned within 10 minutes of knowing about that. And he knew.
Have you spoken to him since?
Oh, we do. We text every day.
And does he have any regrets about that
apology? No. I'm not in the habit of raking up old mud and all that. He has his life to lead. I have my life to lead. But the thing is that my principle is I will continue to speak and I don't like groveling. Now, for the Tony Fernandez, he didn't grovel. He just buckled, right? And I said, nobody's going to make me resign just because, you know, there's a pressure. I can resign voluntarily. Of course, they didn't allow me to resign. And I've got a quid pro quo for not resigning. He thought was, okay, I'll try to please those idiots. But God Almighty said, you know, you don't grovel on the ground to any human beings. You pray, grovel to God Almighty. So the all-powerful is God Almighty. So no matter what people say, out they go.
What about this dispute over some facts with regard to Tony Fernandez? The idea that he was pressured by MAVCOM to cancel those flights. I mean, do you know the true story behind that?
Oh, I have a thick dossier. Now, I would like to say that we tried, you know, to help voters to go to Sabah and so on. And there's nobody that should disallow that to happen. We do it at our own cost because we try to facilitate people. You know, Sabah is not near. It's like going to another country, right? The flight is almost 3 hours. So nobody can really afford to fly just to vote. But they want to go back, use, exercise the democratic rights. So I knew that we should be doing that. And if anybody interfered to say, why the hell are you doing that? Sorry, my word, my language. That's not right. Our choice to do it, yeah? And if we were to be penalized for that, well, God has penalized them better, lah. What I'm saying is that I would like to put it on record that we did what we needed for the country. Whether we got all the flights on board, we were slashed and so on, the records will show. If we need to, one day we will just show it. But I would like to say, please, let the past be past. That was in a different environment. You know, the fear factor was always there. And you can talk to any company. They will tell you the same thing. Today, we are in an environment where that freedom we felt a decade ago was back. People can say, not exactly say what they want, but can voice their opinions, provided it is correct and factual and done properly. Businesses can run. There are problems. They can run to the government for assistance, for guidance and so on. And the government is duty-bound to create a friendly environment, as mentioned by Tun Mahathir, for businesses, whether foreign or local. Because the businesses make this country thrive, not the government, you know.
But what about the question of positions that you've taken in boards of companies? And so, is this a practice that is should be carried on in the new era of democratization, that politicians should not be on boards of companies?
Retired politicians, of course. I was not there as a politician, so retired politician. I had no say in any party in the politics. As I told you, I wasn't even a member anymore.
But wasn't there an expectation that individuals like yourselves, because of your position in government before, would be able to lubricate the wheels of business and so on?
You're talking to Rafida Aziz, right?
Yes, I am.
So please don't put me in the lump of idiots who are politicians who do that. I do not do that. But there is a problem with a government service that is having bureaucracy that kills businesses. These people will get hell from me. Not because I am a chairman there, but telling them, why are you constraining business? And I know firsthand, because I'm there as chairman. So I'm not there to lubricate them. My God, you know. Nobody understands this. I do not do such things. I'm there as chairman, and they know. Nobody used me by putting me as chairman. They can go to hell.
So what about other politicians, lesser politicians?
I don't know about other politicians. You can check them, call them on BFM, talk to them, right? You're talking to Rafida Aziz, so don't cast aspersions.
Okay, I want to go to the question of the business-friendly demeanor of this government. Tun has already made very clear that his government will be a business-friendly government. But we have an issue around investments and tie-ups that we had during the Najib administration with state-owned enterprises in China and so on and so forth, major infrastructure projects. They're under review now. Do you think, in your vast experience as a Minister of International Trade and Industry, that are we in dangerous territory now because of this call for a review of those infrastructure projects?
Well, I personally would subscribe to that, the review. Now, it doesn't mean that it is because it's from China that we need to review it. It's because in some of those projects, the costing seems to be abnormally high. That's what we need to review. It could have been from China, it could have been from anywhere, but something that's supposed to cost less than X billions now has become double X or something like that. You have to review that, right? And most importantly, the cost and benefit. I think any project done by any government at any one time must subscribe to two tests. One is a test of opportunity cost. The other one, the test of cost and benefit. Opportunity cost is you have to invest in something. Is it better to invest in A or in B, which is much more added value to the country? And secondly, benefit and a cost. If it costs you X and your benefit is minus something, you know, X minus something, in other words, it's not worth doing it now. That is what, to me, a review means. So maybe the terms were not to our advantage, I don't know. And maybe the project itself in the long term, it's not going to bring benefit. You could have spent that money doing other things. So in that context, yes, a review is required. It could be from anywhere, for that matter.
Do you have doubts about the integrity of the NADIB administration in terms of policy formulation, in terms of making decisions like this? Was he compromised to the extent that other stakeholders could push deals that were to their benefit against the nation's benefits?
Let me put it this way. I was never in the administration. But judging from what has transpired now, clearly there were some circumventions. Clearly, there was not much thought into approving of some of these projects and deals. And I hate to use the word deals in the same breath as projects, because projects that is linked to deals can't mean anything positive. And so this is what, to me, the investigations have to do, because this involves public funds. You know, if it's some public money, private money, I mean, they take the responsibility for all the liabilities. But it's eventually going to end up with the Treasury, with the government as in the final bearer of all liabilities. We have to look at it.
Now, we have the new Pakatan Harapan cabinet. It's led by somebody you worked under, Tun Dr. Mahathir. But it's also...
With.
And, you know, there are many, of course, individuals now who are part of the federal opposition and who, in the case of Anwar Ibrahim, perhaps coming into the cabinet. Are you confident that the Pakatan Harapan cabinet can fulfill its promises, especially in terms of institutional reform?
Well, let me put it this way. First of all, let's get rid of this 100-day... timeline. This is a fashion of the West. I mean, it's like, why 100 days? Why not 1 year? So if we get rid of these stupid time frames, 100 days and so on, then you get a better perspective. You cannot do things in 100 days. No country in the world can get things done in 100 days. I mean, come on, let's be practical. So if you talk about confidence, then I would say, in the short term, when there are certain things that can be done in the short term, yes, they can. But there's also a short, medium and long term. So if the government is looking at that in those three phases of time frame, I'm confident, because they are now starting with parallel tracks of action.
Are you confident in the individuals that are part of cabinet?
Well, let me put it this way. A cabinet is a collective of people. Any cabinet. I've been in cabinet as a for a long time. There are the laggards in the cabinet, because we have party representation. There are those that are capable. There are those that are middling, okay? But combined, they have different inputs to deliver. Trust me, even the ones we call stragglers, you know, laggards. No, they may seem not as active, you know. Some people look very energetic, can speak very well. That doesn't mean they can work very well. I am more importantly focusing on who can work. The less talk, the better. Work.
Okay, we're going to actually have more talk coming up after the bulletin. I'm speaking to Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, former Minister of International Trade and Industry. We'll be back after the bulletin. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning and welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Sharad Kutin, and our guest on the show today is Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, former Minister of International Trade and Industry. Remember, you can always join our conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Tan Sri, you've already suggested that you're very confident in the leadership of Tun Dr. Mahathir. What about Anwar Ibrahim, slated to take over? We don't know what the timeline is yet, but are you confident in his leadership with Pakatan Harapan?
Let me put it this way. Let's not preempt anything. Reason being, the God are multi-determined. Man proposes, God disposes. Life is in God's hands. So if I were to say I'm confident, down the line 2 years later, I'm superseding God. So let's not discuss that. As far as I'm concerned, anybody who is in that position, now or later, will have that responsibility to lead to the best of his or her ability, and to make sure that leadership is for the good of people and country.
But you knew the man.
He was my student.
And so what do you think of him?
Well, everybody have leadership qualities. It's your motivation that's important. So if his motivation is like the motivation of the rest, especially Tun's motivation. It is to do the reforms required by this country to make this a better country, a better environment for people to live in, to work in, for investments, and for the country to continue to grow. And, of course, to have the quality of the people that is first world quality, you know, where integrity is held right up there and corruption is no longer a culture, it's just an aberration, and where competence and performance at the highest level is benchmarked against the global standards. If that is the basic governance criteria and the basic aspirations of leadership, why not? We all should have confidence. But remember, it's not a one-man show. You can be the most brilliant of prime ministers if you have goons around you in the cabinet and you know in your group, then you get output that is below par. Let me put it this way. But because these are young people around them who probably have that opportunity to learn and to understand better and who have not yet immersed in any thing that's unsavory, they're starting afresh, I hope that they will maintain that freshness, open-mindedness, and most importantly, do not subscribe to this culture of lack of integrity that has brought this country almost to its knees. Now, based on those premise, I am confident that team will work. Please don't talk about one man, one woman. It's a whole team.
Speaking of women, Stephanie Counter has a question. It says, well, what can be done to improve women's representation in government? We know there's been a lot of calls for cabinet to have at least 30% women. Do you support that?
I think many people have not listened to what I said about this quota. Let's not talk about numbers, please. Let's talk about quality. And let's not focus on gender. May the best person be there to lead and do what it takes for the country. I don't care whether it's man or woman or in-betweens, if there are any. It's a person, the output, the value system that person holds. Let's not quibble over gender, right? This is 2018. We're going on to 2020. For as long as we quibble over 18, we're going to get substandard people up there.
Now, there's a question from Ali Johan. He says, what's your advice for young MPs that have been elected? In fact, perhaps we could extend it to another question, which has got to do with UMNO. UMNO is going to be His Majesty's loyal opposition. How do you think they're going to play? What role can they play in the coming years?
Well, if they play roles, then they'll be very nasty people. I don't like playing roles. I like to use the word assuming roles. Assuming roles means with sense of responsibility and accountability.
Do you think that's likely with UMNO at this point in time?
Let me put it this way. You probably have a different crop of people there who now saw that the way of doing things that they did before was not the way to go. So maybe we do. But then we don't know. If they play politics in the parliament, then you get the same foul mouth slandering and all that, which is a nuisance. You know, sometimes I don't even want to read what the comments are. It's so rubbishy.
What's your advice for UMNO, though, coming out of this defeat?
Come on. If you had defeat staring in your face and knowing what the mistakes were, you need people like me to advise? Come on. Please. They should be looking at what they know already what's wrong. If they don't know, then please, just consider UMNO already illegal. All right? They're facing illegality, you know? Right there, staring in their face because they have contravened their own constitution. Sometimes people say, okay, please advise us. No. It's beyond advice. UMNO is how many years old?
What do you think is going to happen in the next year with regard to this government? Do you think it will be able to deliver on the agenda?
Let me put it this. Again, we are preempting God's will, all right? But I would say, based on the starting a few weeks now, very few weeks, really, and seeing the way they are going, approaching those parallel tracks of action, I do have that confidence that some achievables can be delivered in the time frame set aside. Don't talk about 100 days, yeah? Some, the medium ones, will be realized as it is. The long-term ones may take a bit longer because there are certain things that needed to be put right first, right? The fundamentals we need to be put right. And the structures that have been crumbling so far will have to be put right too.
Do you think the basic assumptions that Malaysians hold about their society, about governance, has changed? We know we voted in particular ways on May 9th, but do you think that culturally, ideologically, that we've shifted? Is there need for a mind shift?
No. Different generations of Malaysians have always expected their government to be an honest one, a competent one, an accountable one, and a government that took care of the interests of rakyat. Why do you think over the last 50 years, people didn't quibble over all these things? Because all the misdeeds that happened, of course they were. They were run by humans, okay? They're not even robots. Made mistake because the stupid humans behind the robots got programmed them wrongly. So there were mistakes, but I would say they were aberrations. For the last 10 years, the same mistakes were no longer aberrations. It seems to be part of a culture. Now, this generation of Malaysians suddenly realized that. Even the generation of Malaysians before who lived through the 50 years, like me, we understood there were aberrations, but the main stay of the people who govern were really the main components were up to speed on what they should be doing, accountability and so on. But over the last 10 years, we saw the decline. And unfortunately for them, not only the oldies like me saw the decline, they saw, because they had exposed, they are exposed to the global standards and so on, they saw that we are not up to the mark they expected, you know? And that is why I think it's a double whammy. The oldies like me said, my God, what have we done? What have they done? Where have we gone to? The new ones felt shameful that by the time they were able to vote, they're voting a choice between really black and white. You see? So a double whammy for those that left that have been sent out of their jobs by God Almighty.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Tan Sri. It's always a pleasure to have you. I've been speaking to Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, former Minister of International Trade and Industry. This has been The Breakfast Grill, and I'm Sharad Kutin for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U Mobile, where data hearts you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.